Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast, where we bring together the best medical minds, thought leaders, scientists, patients, and caregivers to inform and inspire the spondylitis community. I'm your host, Jill Miller, living my best spa life, knowing that how we meet today has the power to change everything going forward. Please note that the information provided in this podcast should not be considered medical advice. We do encourage all listeners to consult their healthcare professionals for medical concerns. Thank you for listening, and we hope you find our discussion today enlightening. Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast. Today, our guest is Lorraine Shimenda. She's a functional nutrition therapy practitioner and co-founder of a French language educational and coaching platform dedicated to helping people with autoimmune conditions. She empowers individuals to take an active role in their healing journey using integrative and natural approaches through her online practice. Having navigated her own path to healing with ankylosing spondylitis with a functional approach, going from being bedridden, dependent on medication, and in consistent pain at the age of 23, she is now in full remission, healthy, and thriving. This is why she's so passionate about helping others in their health journey. Today, we're going to talk about managing AS from the inside out, a functional approach to whole body healing. And in this episode, Lorraine joins us to share her personal and professional journey with ankylosing spondylitis, and we're going to explore how nutrition, gut health, and sustainable lifestyle changes can support whole body healing and complement conventional care. She offers practical tips for managing AS from the inside out and building a life that feels more empowered and balanced. Lorraine, welcome to SpondyCast. How are
you? Thank you very much, and thank you for that intro.
Yes. And I know my French is not that great. So I'm going to let you introduce your platform's name to us.
Yes, my platform is a French-based platform called Bien-être Auto-Immune. I'm French originally, hence my name also that is very French. And I'm very, very passionate about bringing everything that I learned from the US, because we have like 20 years of background in this whole holistic space in the US and not so much in France. So I was very passionate about bringing that to the French Francophone market. Yeah.
I love it. And can you tell us a little bit about your story if you're comfortable sharing it, you know, your journey with AS and how you ended up in functional nutrition?
Sure. Yes, I was not in functional nutrition at all initially. I was living what I would see now as quite an unhealthy lifestyle where I wasn't really preoccupied by my health at all. I was 23 years old. I was very much preoccupied by my studies. I was studying, I was in a master's degree in business, and I was partying a lot. I was going out a lot and eating a lot of fast food. And I literally woke up one morning, what feels like it happened from like one day to the other. Now I know that I had some little signs that were bringing me to that point. But the pain that I was feeling really came within like a day. One day I was good. And then the next day I woke up and I just couldn't walk because I was in so much pain. My lower back and my SI joints were just really, really stiff and really painful, like throbbing. And as the days go by, it just became worse and worse. I was, as I said, in my master's degree, and I was working at the time. I was in a company doing what they call, it was in France, it's like an internship. So like in the last 6 month internship, I could not finish my internship. I was in so much pain. I couldn't sit up for more than like 10 minutes without crying, even laying down. I wouldn't sleep at night. It was so violent. And so I went on to see several doctors and chiropractors because I thought maybe there's just something that's misaligned. And, you know, I had no idea what was going on with my body. And I was 23 years old. And after 6 months of relentless going to see multiple rheumatologists and multiple doctors, this was back in France, I got my ankylosing spondylitis diagnosis. And it was at the same time, it was kind of like a jewel. Like, okay, finally I know what I have. So now I know that this is behind me. Like I have that like sticker, like this is ankylosing spondylitis, right? And so for some strange reason, like it's comforting to know what you have. But then when the doctors explained what it was and what my future looked like, the first like few doctors that I spoke to, because I was seeing a few different doctors, they all said this is going to evolve and it can get stable, but it can also get worse, and you are very likely to finish your life in a wheelchair. And it's insane to tell this to a 23-year-old, where it's false. The statistics are against that, but it can be a possibility, and I was crushed. I was put on immunosuppressants, and I was told that under these immunosuppressants, I could not get pregnant. I would have to get off of them to be able to get pregnant. And this was the only hope that I had to live pain-free. So at some point, I would have to make a choice. Either I take my immunosuppressants and I'm pain-free, which didn't happen, by the way. They didn't work as well as I thought they would. And then if I want to get pregnant, I have to be off of them and be in horrendous pain. It was the pain was just unbearable on a day-to-day. So that's where I was in between those kind of two choices.
Whew, that's a spot many of us have been in, but
yes,
and were you were living with your family in France at the time, or were you on?
So I had gone back to live with my mother, because my internship was close to where she was, but originally I was living by myself. I was living by myself since I was 18, but yes, I was with my mother at the time. I was 23 years old. I had my life ahead of me, and I was full of life. I wanted to gobble up any experience that I could from life. Like I loved meeting new people and traveling and discovering the world. And it kind of all came to a halt, and it was a real grieving process.
And at what point did you find functional nutrition? Was it a journey after trying all the drugs? And
So I had a journey for sure of trying all the drugs until I found the immunosuppressants, because no drugs were working. The NSAIDs weren't working. I mean, I was on very, very heavy pain medication, a lot of different like morphine types, and it was a lot. They didn't really work so well. And until I was put on immunosuppressants, they kind of worked, but I would say they helped like at maybe 10-15%, like recover 10-15%, but I wasn't able to walk more than 5 minutes. And what really made the switch and the change was, at the time, my now husband — we weren't married at the time, but he had to go to New York for his job, and we were in France. So I had to move to New York for his job if we wanted to be together.
Okay.
Yes, yep. I had to move. And so within all of this, it was really scary. And I was going back and forth to get my medication back from France and going to New York. And it's actually what saved me. I came to the US and I stumbled upon a documentary that was, I can't remember the name of it, but it was a lot of different functional doctors that were being interviewed and understanding the root cause. It was all about understanding the root cause of autoimmune diseases. And it just went like tilt. I had never heard about any of this. I had asked every single doctor that I saw. I had said, what can I do? Can I change my diet? Should I do anything? What can I do? They all said nothing. We don't know how autoimmune diseases start. The only thing that we can tell you is if you take this medication, you will get better. I didn't get better. And so for me, I was like this. I found my people. I found my circle. This is it. And
That's
from
awesome.
Then on, yeah. And from then on, I just dove right into the functional medicine space. And I found one of the doctors that was interviewed in that documentary. I found him. He's in Texas. And I was like, this is the guy that's going to get me out of this. And I put in all of my savings, because it costs a lot of money, especially when you're only 20. I was 24 at the time. All of my savings went into this. And he was like, give me 18 months. You'll be back on your feet. And I literally 18 months later, I was off my medication, back on my feet.
Wow.
It was insane. And I got pregnant.
Practicing?
Yes, he's still practicing. I'm happy to share his name if I can.
Yeah, no, I think that would be great.
Mm-hmm. He's called Dr. Peter Osborne. He's a functional doctor based in Texas.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And that you were then converted. I mean, it was.
Yes, I was then converted. But then I did a lot more. I mean, I worked with him and he got me, we did a lot of testing. I understood so much about my body. But I wasn't working because legally I wasn't allowed to work because I had just moved to the US. But also I was in so much pain. I couldn't walk. So, I mean, I could walk like 5 minutes and then I would have to sit down. I would just sit down on the street in the middle of the street. That's how bad it was. I couldn't like power through. And so I just dove into everything that I could and I found the autoimmune protocol. So I had the help of this functional doctor, but then I really dove deep into the works of Dr. Sarah Ballantyne. And really I joined the whole community of the autoimmune protocol that I think you guys have talked about a few times.
Yeah, probably not enough.
Well, let's talk about it.
Yeah. So I think let's talk about that. And it's, I know one of the things we wanted to also talk about a little bit is what exactly is a functional nutrition therapy practitioner?
Mm-hmm.
And how is that different from conventional nutrition?
Yeah. Well,
whichever way works for you, because I think you can probably weave the story a little better. But if you want to talk about the autoimmune protocol, that would be cool.
No. I can definitely dig into what functional nutrition is, because then I didn't say that, but then I just completely converted into going back to school and going back to studying, and I became a functional nutritional therapy practitioner. And how we work is we really assess and work on the foundations of health, which are digestion, blood sugar regulation or blood sugar balance, fatty acid status. We look at mineral status and the last one. Oh, I'm missing one. And hydration. And so they sound so basic, but you really need to go back to the basics when you're looking at just health and balance as a general. And so we work on lifestyle. We work on life choices and lifestyle choices. And we work a lot on nutrition. And we really have a root cause, bio-individual, data-driven approach. And data-driven, I mean, we were trained to do symptom reading. So truly understanding what symptoms mean what. In terms of we can have dysregulations just of an organ or systems or different systems of organs. And we can have nutritional deficiencies. They all show up as different symptoms. So we are trained to read those symptoms, interpret them, and use them as data. And in that sense, we build a protocol. And so a food, nutrition, lifestyle protocol really geared towards your bio-individual needs. Which is a little bit different to just the typical nutrition or nutritional view of kind of move more, eat less kind of thing. We don't talk about calories. We talk about nutritional density. We really focus on the nutritional density and going back to the basics of what we need as human beings.
So that's really interesting. Okay. I know we're going to unpack it more, but let's keep going.
Yeah.
I think that like, what do we need as human beings? Cause yeah.
We kind of lost that along the way and we're so thankful or not thankful is the word I'm looking for. We're lucky to be living in such a modern society where we have so much comfort. But some of this comfort can come with a price. And so the modern society has brought us further and further away from nature. And essentially, nature is what brings us back to homeostasis. It brings us back to being balanced. It's truly where we came from.
Yeah.
And we can't expect a bear to be living in a house or in a building and be drinking tap water and eating processed foods and not be in contact with the earth and with their friends and playing on video games all day and still be healthy, you know, like it's the same. We're an animal species. So yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. So let's talk about, you want to talk now about the autoimmune protocol?
Yeah. Favorite topic.
Yeah. Let's talk about that.
So for me, the autoimmune protocol is really what saved me. I mean, I am what saved me because I put in the work, but understanding that there are, it's a protocol. So it's a short-term diet and lifestyle protocol with five different pillars. So there's diet, of course, food. We have movement. Too little movement or too much movement can have a great impact on your immune system and on autoimmunity. Sleep, of course, there's thousands of studies on sleep and its link with immunity, autoimmunity, inflammation. And what's the other one? Connection with nature, with others, with yourself. And the last one is stress management. So those five pillars, we tend to focus a lot on the food one because the food one is just so dense. There's a lot of things to know. And you're essentially, you're eliminating certain categories of food that are known to cause or induce leaky gut and that are known to stimulate and irritate the immune system. Because from what we understand of autoimmune diseases, there are three denominators or common denominators, which is leaky gut. So leaky gut is when you have your gut lining that is not intact anymore, and there are little lesions in between your cells of your gut lining. And that creates issues because we have things that go through the gut lining that are not supposed to go through. And so you're not doing that job of keeping things out and letting the right things in. So leaky gut is one of the common denominators that we found in the scientific literature. The second thing is an immune dysregulation. We tend to forget that all autoimmune diseases, not just ankylosing spondylitis, it really comes down to the immune system that's not working correctly, right? It's creating autoantibodies. And we're understanding that mechanism. We understand how it works and why. Well, the why is actually a little complex, but we understand how it works. And then the third thing is nutritional deficiencies. And so the autoimmune protocol is really geared towards reducing all the stimuli, reducing what affects and stimulates the immune system, brings in more nutrients. So we're focusing on nutrient-dense foods because we need those building blocks for your immune system, your hormonal system, your nervous system. It needs all the building blocks to work properly. And the third is repairing that leaky gut. So all these foods that were eliminated, which is essentially all grains, including, of course, gluten, like wheat, is a big one, but all grains. There's pseudo grains like quinoa, buckwheat. We're eliminating all dairy, all nightshades. So nightshades is tomatoes, peppers, potatoes, goji berries. There's a few other random ones.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah. They're all from the same family. And the reason is they have a high ratio of lectins. There's a lot of lectins in those foods. Lectins is a protein that most plants have. It's kind of their defense mechanism. It's more present in the skin and in the seeds, specifically of nightshades, also in grains and in legumes. So I didn't mention that, but we're also eliminating legumes. And these lectins are known to irritate the gut lining. They're known to contribute to leaky gut. So we really want to take away for a time being, it's 30 to 90 days, take away all these foods that we know can contribute to that leaky gut. We want to help repair the gut lining. So we're taking away anything that's like shooting arrows at it, basically.
And we're also taking away like sugars.
Yes, alcohol. Sugar. Exactly. Yep, you got it. Sugar, alcohol, even eggs. Eggs is more so for the immune system. They can stimulate the immune system. Stimulants like coffee and chocolate. So it's quite a long list and it feels a little bit overwhelming when you discover this list. When you focus on what you can and should eat, that's where it gets a little easier and you switch your mindset.
Got it. I'm like, what's left?
So much is left. So much. So then you discover a more like ancestral way of eating. And that's when you look at nutrient density. And the foods that are have high nutrient density are really interesting for our health, and that don't have any like negative things that come with it, are like leafy greens, cruciferous vegetables, mushrooms. Mushrooms in and of itself is like a whole category. You could be eating them every day. Then we have organ meats. Organ meat is the best bang for your buck. Literally, they're actually quite cheap because nobody wants them. And they're super, super dense in nutrients. So I love focusing on organs, any types. And I have a few products that I love to buy. Like I love this protein powder called Organize. They're amazing. And they just have like a whole set of different organs that are from grass-fed beef and pasture raised. But you can also just get like a can of codfish.
Cod livers.
Cod livers. Yeah, thank you. Cod livers. There's a lot of different ways. Or make your own pate. I do this on a weekly. And you buy your own chicken livers, cook them, blend them, and you have your own pate.
And other meats, are they out?
Of course. No, you can eat any kind of meat. Yes. And you want to vary. You don't want to be eating organ meat all the time, every single day, nor red meat every single day. You really want to be varying with fish. The smaller the fish, the better. With seafood. Seafood is so amazing, so dense in nutrients. We also want to add in seaweed for that iodine. And then you can focus on literally every single vegetable that you can think of. And it's fun because you discover new vegetables and you discover new recipes. I love okra. Okra is so weird as a vegetable. It's like a little African green bean, I would put it as. Do you know okra?
It's a really interesting. I only discovered it, probably it's now been about 15 years.
Okay.
But yeah, there are all kinds of really different vegetables out there. You can go to H Mart too, which has a lot of really cool, which is like the Korean grocery store stuff. And what about bone broth?
Oh my gosh. I'm such a huge believer in bone broth. Yeah. A cup of bone broth a day gets you all the way. It's one of the most nourishing foods for your gut. It doesn't bring in all the nutrients that you need. You can't live off of bone broth.
Right.
And again, you need to vary. You need fruits also. You need the pigments in your food. You need different colors because it's in the colors that you find the polyphenols. And these are the antioxidants that will help reduce oxidative stress and so reduce inflammation, calm the inflammation. But bone broth is just so good for all the amino acids. It has collagen, it has glycine. It's great for your gut health. It's great for your skin. For your hair, your nails, it's really a superfood in my opinion.
And on bone broth, do you care if it's from Whole Foods or if it's homemade? Is there a do your best?
You know, I think there are some purists that will say no, it only has to be homemade, and so you know where the bones are from. And I love to make my own. I don't do it all the time. I have two kids, you know, I'm a working mom. Like, who has the time to make their own sauerkraut, their own bone broth, their own this and that all the time?
Yeah.
So you do your best. That's like, I think that's the hardest thing when you dive into this world, is that you are tempted to have to do everything yourself at home. But you have to also be realistic with your life. And, you know, when you have a busy job and kids and or you're a caretaker to someone, you can't afford that. So you do your best. Yep. And I think that's important.
Sometimes that goes to the, I think it goes to the stress pillar of the autoimmune.
100%.
Right? You just have to go, it's okay.
Yes.
I did once have a, I remember somebody was in a Oh, it was a support group meeting, and we had someone talking about the importance of hydration.
Yeah.
And he was an Ayurvedic doctor from India that had come to visit us. And somebody said, well, what kind of water do I need? Do I need ion-based water? Do I need this kind of water? And he said, you're talking to someone who comes from a place in the world where 70% of the water isn't clean. I would suggest clean water. And don't stress yourself beyond that. And I don't know if you have an opinion there, but I think some of it is, yeah, the stress of it. And it becomes overwhelming. I personally stopped doing holidays many years ago because I found holidays turned into me still having some like flares into February and March every year. I was like, this is not okay, what else do we need That's to cover smart. In the protocol? Well, you know, not everybody loves that, but whatever.
No, but you have to do what's best according to you, and knowledge is power, and knowing your body, knowing what triggers it and what isn't helpful is essential. And if that doesn't work for you, like, I think that speaks volumes. I'm happy that you shared that, because there might be a lot of people putting pressure on themselves. Like, I need to be present for the holidays, or I need to be drinking this extremely clean and well-filtered water. Right. And I mean, I have a very expensive filter that I use, but you don't have to, you don't need it to be healthy.
Right. And I think water in general in this country is clean. Generally, there's all kinds of stuff.
That's debatable. It's clean. Yeah, it's clean of like pathogens. Just like probably if you would compare that to India, for example, then sure, yeah. But it's tricky. It's tricky to know exactly what's in your water. It really depends on where you live, and there can be contaminations from time to time, and yeah, I think knowledge is power. Knowing what is the most important thing for you to make a change is really the best way to go about it.
Right. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about your certified in gut health testing that goes along with functional nutrition and autoimmune protocol. Can you tell us about SIBO, right? SIBO, GI mapping and MRT. And then how does that all shape? Because in my mind, I'm thinking like, oh gosh, I'm sure AIP sounds overwhelming to most people. Yeah. Or many of us have tried it in some way, but you were talking a little bit about it being data driven in an approach. Like, does this help inform sort of the roadmap for how you would help someone with AS?
Yeah. The more information you have, the better. So the more information you have on paper too, like you need both. You need to have a consultation. You need to ask the questions and understand the health history, the background, the family history, what symptoms they have right now. As little as like, how do their nails look like? Or how are they sleeping? Are they waking up at 3 a.m. at night? Little things like that. But also the actual like concrete, like on paper, what's going on in the gut, what's going on in the body. I do also blood work. In terms of gut, the gut is really, or gut health is really at the forefront of autoimmune diseases. It really, in my opinion, it really all stems from the gut. It doesn't mean that it's only about the gut, and it clearly is not. And you really need a protocol to support the immune system and support whatever's going on with that person individually. But gut health is so important. In every study that we've looked at, we've always found a leaky gut in someone who has an active autoimmune disease. So we really want to focus on that and work on that. The studies, the test that I use is called the GI map. It's a very broad and functional test in the sense that, first of all, they use an advanced technology of PCR and DNA sequencing. So it's a lot more precise than your typical microbiology kind of test. The second thing is it's so broad in all of the markers that we're looking at. And we're really looking at a full panel of pathogens, big bad guys that we don't want to be seeing that could be really symptomatic, especially we have a lot of gut symptoms, and we really want to be looking at that. Then we're looking at a few microbiome, like kind of like the balance, like the commensal, which is like the good guys, the opportunistic bacteria that we label as the bad guys. They're not technically bad guys, but we look at that balance in your microbiome. We have a good amount. I mean, we could be looking at a lot more, but we don't have that technology yet to be looking at the full microbiome. But we want to see, you know, do we have a good enough foundation of microbes? And then we're looking at inflammatory markers. We're looking at functional markers. Are we digesting our foods? Because if you're not digesting properly, if you don't have enough hydrochloric acid in your stomach, pancreatic enzymes, bile, and all the good stuff that you need to be digesting, then you can do everything that you can take all the supplements and do everything. Like, it's all going to come back if you don't fix the functional first. So you really want to work on that first. And so once we look at that, then we know what approach we need to take.
And so I'm fascinated as like what you might find. But I don't know if we want to get that deep in the weeds in this conversation. But you're really looking for things, because I think one of the things, maybe that this is ignorance, like in terms of research, why isn't everyone having this testing done? Is it research prohibitive, or is it because it's very specific individual medicine?
It's very specific to the functional medicine realm.
Right.
It's looking at the root cause.
Right.
Traditional Western medicine doesn't really look for the root cause. That's not their paradigm. They look at symptoms and they look to reduce symptoms. That can be very helpful when you're in a lot of pain. Like, you need something quick and fast to just be able to breathe, right? And sleep at night with no pain. So it can be helpful, but both approaches, in my opinion, are necessary. It's not, you don't absolutely need to do that test. It's not like if you don't do that test, then you're going to get nowhere and you're not going to be, you know, getting better and healing. And
right.
It's a good to have. Some would argue that there are different tests that they prefer. I really like the GI map, and I'm just very, very equipped to using that in my practice. But yeah, I think it's a preference.
Yeah. And I think there's also the right. You're looking at bio individuality
mm-hmm.
and an outcome for that person, which I think does get trapped in that Western
For sure.
Which I think is an unfortunate situation that we put ourselves in.
Yeah.
And I'm a very big fan of root cause. At any rate. Okay. So if you're working with somebody, you've done their testing, which comes back, is really like once you've done the testing and you've got some baseline, it's you understand their bio individuality. Is that the way to frame it?
Yeah, okay. I understand what's going on in their gut. It doesn't mean that I understand their whole like health status and everything. I need to tie everything together. It's kind of detective work, really.
Yeah.
It's really like, you know, when you have that big wall with the red like lines and the dots, like you're doing that in your head. It's fun. It's a lot of fun.
but you need that murder mystery show with the channel in Paris, and they're always...
Exactly.
What you're...
You have like the photographs of each person.
Yeah, and where they've been, what they've done. Once you've got that bio individuality, then you would start toward tailoring dietary strategies, looking at the autoimmune protocol. Can you walk us through maybe what some of that looks like specifically?
Sure. Yes. And I just want to come back because you did mention MRT and SIBO. Really quickly, MRT is a test that I use for food sensitivities. So again, it's not a must. You don't have to go down that route, but it is a good to have. It's really tricky because when you're doing AIP, you're also eliminating a lot of foods. And with the MRT, there are two that I like, actually. There's the LRA that is a lot more precise, but a lot more expensive. And then the MRT, you come out with like a really, really, it's just different sensitivities. The MRT is a lot more sensitive, but then you come out with a long list of foods. And so when you're using tools like the autoimmune protocol, and then you add on top of that the food sensitivities, it can get really overwhelming. So I don't use it all the time. It really depends actually on what I find in the GI map. in the GI map, if I have like, there's a marker called secretory IgA, if that is like off the roof, or if it's really, really low, then I'll want to run an MRT or an LRA, like a food sensitivity test. And then SIBO is very different. It really isn't tied to autoimmunity in itself. It's an imbalance of your gut microbiomes in your small intestine. So not in your colon, not in the large intestine, but in the small intestine. There's a lot of symptoms of SIBO. It's very typical within 2 hours of eating, you'll have like a lot of bloating, and you can have constipation, diarrhea, gas, a lot of acid reflux. Like it's very symptomatic. SIBO is very symptomatic. I don't focus on that, but I have a lot of people who have SIBO that come see me. But it's not as important in the whole sphere of like what I'm looking at for autoimmunity specifically, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so once I draw this kind of like map of who this person is and what we need to be doing, then we use all these tools. And so the first tool is the autoimmune protocol, so the food pillar. And we discuss on what makes sense, what is doable on their end. Again, if this is someone who doesn't have the capacity to be cooking so much, or that has a very busy life, like we'll pick and choose kind of what makes sense for them. Ideally, you want to be following the autoimmune protocol to the T, but it's not like if you don't, then it doesn't work at all. There's a modified AAP now that has been out for about a year. So now it's like the, how do they call it? I think it's the classic AIP and then the modified AIP. Okay. or core AIP and modified AIP. And modified AIP is great for those people who just don't have the time or that are already super overwhelmed with like their food choices. And it has a little bit more flexibility. Like you can have rice, you can have pseudo grains, you can have legumes, you can have ghee, like that sort of thing. And then we focus on sleep is a huge one. We want to get a minimum of 8 hours of sleep. If your body needs more, and a lot of times people suffering from autoimmune disease, their body needs a lot of sleep. If your body needs 10 hours, you find the time to give it 10 hours of sleep. Thinking of the right conditions and the blue light at night. And we really talk about every single detail of that person's life, how we can make it a little better. And I do that over a time period of minimum 3 months. I don't just see someone once and then, okay, you're off. Good luck. Like I really, it's a true like coaching, like 3 months of coaching. I see them every 2 to 3 weeks and we really move forward together and we make these decisions together. And I like kind of pinpoint what's the next thing that we can make different or better. Stress management is a huge one. Huge. Yeah. So I focus on that a lot.
Can only imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have to say, actually, from my experience, when I was starting to get better, I only started with changing my diet. And I just focused on that. And that was when I was living in New York. And it took me a year. And within a year, I got like about 50, 60% better. And it was awesome. I went back to work. I was working marketing at the time. Went back to work. It was great. Taking a few medications, but less. It was good. And then I moved to San Francisco. And when I moved to San Francisco, I had to quit my job. I moved again for my husband's work. I had to quit my job in New York. And that was actually great. It was great for me. And we moved right next to a Buddhist temple. So I started doing Qigong every Friday. And I started doing, I went to like these group kind of community classes for breathing with this amazing like Indian man with like long hair that went all the way to the floor. Like it was a different world. And that space where I worked on breathing, calming my nervous system and doing all the things, I was doing yoga and I started using infrared light, just different tools. I went to 100% in 4 months and I stopped all medication and I was in full remission.
Wow.
It was so fast. So diet plus the stress regulation, like the nervous system regulation, the two together is the best combo that you can have.
So let me ask you this, because I know, I mean, I read in your bio and I think in some of your background materials, you were at one point bedridden for the most part.
Yeah.
And I believe a lot of people have been there and may be there today. I was at my worst, I could get out of bed about 3 hours a day. And how much time, I know over the time horizon of which it took to improve, but how much time of your daily activities did you have to shift? Did you have to take on more on a daily basis, or did you feel like shifting diet and then moving into, we'll call like the stress pillar?
Mm-hmm.
Did that add hours to your day? Because I think a lot of times I sense there's a lot of people who
get overwhelmed,
don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine and I, we always talk about like really being yogis. How do you be a yogi? You really need to invest like 4 hours a day. And I don't yet, someday. But I think, you know, it's food and it's yoga and it's breathing and meditation. And mm-hmm. But I think you're sensing the same thing. And clearly, if that's the lifestyle you're living fully as a yogi, you'd be expected to put time and effort into it.
Mm-hmm.
But I have found that when I feel better, I'm doing those stress reduction things. I'm eating better, which I can't say I'm even getting a C- in right now. Those things, I feel like I feel lighter and there's more time in my life often.
Yes. I completely agree.
Yeah. What are your thoughts there? I want to inspire people to give it a try.
Yeah. So it's going to be a dual kind of answer. For my part, I was very fortunate to not have children. First of all, I was 23. So I only had myself to take care of. I have two kids now and I'm like, I don't know how I would have done that with two children.
So hard.
So yeah. So in a way that was a blessing and I wasn't working. So I only had that to focus on. Like I wasn't able to work, which is, again, it's like, it's a hard situation to be in, but it was a blessing also. So that made it kind of easier. And also for, I have a type of personality that is like, I'm just a go-getter. When I want something or when something happens to me that felt so violent and so unfair, I was like, this is not happening. This will not be happening to me. And it just like created a fire in me. And I was like, I will do whatever it takes. But I understand that like not everyone is in that situation with, you know, all the time on their hands and no kids. I did have no money though. So that was tricky. But that's where having someone be a part of your team, being on your side that can help you is essential. And I understand that that is also quite an investment. But I put in all of my savings. I had nothing left at the end of it. And it was, if I had to do it again, I would do it again. Like it was the best investment for me in my life. And I think just finding the right people to surround you. And even if it's just what you guys do, like even if it's like a community circle that you find, and in that community circle, there's people that can inspire you and that can be kind of like your mentor buddy, you know?
Yeah.
Create that for yourself. There's many ways to do that. But yeah, it can be hard because it's like, I don't have time in my day. I'm working. And in the morning, I'm taking care of my kids. And then in the day, I need to work. And like, you need to pick the most important things that can fit into your life. But if you want them to fit into your life, you can. You can always find a way to fit the most important things in your life.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I also, you know, one of the other ahas on my own journey that I'm sure I stole from someone else was, and I was in food and agriculture for a long time as a career. So I learned like the closer you eat to the earth, the better off you are. Just generally when it comes to processing.
Love that.
But I did go through where, you know, people always are like, well, I need a juicer and I need this. I'm like, no, you just need some cucumbers in a blender and stick it in and it sits in your fridge for 3 days and it's great. I think some of it too is the simplicity. The for me personally, and I know a lot of people, like, it's just daunting to cook when you have two children and a full-time job and a, and going into the winter now in terms of surrounding like community. So I've done over time, you can grab people who want to do the same foods you want to do, or, and just, we used to batch cook.
Exactly.
Not obvious stuff, but we would batch cook for three families on a Sunday, and then everyone had three or four meals for the week. It was, and it is, it's expensive, right? Like, groceries are horrendous right now. And
I know,
they're so bad. But there are things, and I also try to remind, like, oh, it's up, we're coming on soup season, where everything that's sort of going eh in your fridge can turn into like the healthiest soups in the world. And simply, so it is daunting, but I think it's, so many of us like need to take, I always think of like, there's like a proverb or something that's like, there's 1,000 steps in all of our journeys, and the only step is like the one that you're going to take next.
Exactly. Yeah. And if that is the issue, like, I get it. Like, being healthy and eating healthy is very expensive and is very time consuming, but there are some tools, like there are some ways to go about it. There's tons of resources on like budget. If you type budget friendly AIP recipes, you will find tons of eBooks. There are some great resources. I know that, Autoimmune Wellness, they have a few of those. It's a blog about AIP, Autoimmune Wellness, by Jamie Trescott and Mickey Trescott and Jamie Hartman. And they, they have a lot of those resources, like budget-friendly AIP recipes and batch cooking AIP recipes. Nothing has to be fancy. You can put like a bunch of veggies that you like cut, you know, it doesn't have to be cut perfectly. You don't hardly need to cut them up. Just put them on a pan, on an oven pan, and put them in the oven 35 minutes, 380 degrees, and you're good to go.
That's like, amazing.
Yeah.
I love that. Okay. So I know there's like five questions that I haven't asked yet. We have like five.
Yeah. You might have to pick and choose.
You're so great though. Like, you're super easy to talk to. And I think I imagine all of your patients feel that way, like that they just can connect, and you're so.
Thank you.
But I think you also have, right? Like, you've been here with the rest of us.
Yeah, and I've been there.
Okay. We talked a lot about the other pillars, the lifestyle components. Generally, do you see any common patterns of triggers with people with AS?
So interestingly, specifically with AS, there is a bacteria that keeps coming up in the scientific literature. It's called Klebsiella. And it does not mean that because you have that bacteria in your gut that you are going to develop AS. And it doesn't mean that if you have, you know, all the genetics and everything, that if with that bacteria you will. But we're trying to understand the link between that bacteria and AS. And so we found that in a population who has AS, it's quite predominant. And the true link is still not understood properly, but there is something around that. That's just like one thing particular to AS. The rest is just particular to autoimmune diseases. And that's environmental triggers. It can be forever chemicals. It can be different types of chemicals that you're putting on your skin, like in your skincare. It can be in the water. It can be, it really is an accumulation of chemicals coming from your environment, air, water, food, cosmetics, makeup. Yep. Makeup is a big one. All of that combination, kind of like it fills up your toxic bucket. And if you're not able, if you don't have enough like little holes, or if your holes, the holes under your bucket, I'm trying to like paint a picture here, the holes under your bucket, if they're not big enough, or if they're like obstructed, then you're not going to be detoxing properly. And so you're going to be just adding on top of it with all the other stuff that you're adding from your environment, and it's going to overflow. And usually that's when it kicks in kind of the autoimmunity mechanism that's happening in your body. The autoimmunity mechanism is complicated, and it really is, if to try and make it simple, it's a result of just overstimulation from external things. Your immune cells aren't functioning properly for a period of time that is resulting in pure inflammation. And then at one point, your body is not able to recognize what cells are external cells and what cells are your own cells. And that's right. When it comes in.
Interesting. And so aside from Klebsiella, like any foods in general, or just kind of everybody's a little different once you...
No, well, there's all the common foods from AIP. Yeah. It can really be, well, gluten is a huge one.
Yes.
Gluten, there's a direct link with a purely direct link with a few autoimmune diseases like Hashimoto. There isn't a proven direct link with AS to my knowledge, but there is an indirect link because gluten stimulates the immune system. It irritates the immune system and it induces leaky gut. It really has a really big role in the gut lining in the inducing leaky gut. A lot of times dairy products also, it's the casein.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask A1. A question that we all hear over and over since you're sort of, intercontinental. Is the gluten in Europe different?
No. Well, it is. It is. The gluten in Europe is not GMO. That's the only difference.
Right.
But it does not resemble the gluten that we used to eat 100 or 200 years ago. Right. It doesn't have anything to do with what wheat used to be like and the composition of what the gluten is and how irritating it is to the immune system, stimulating. So I'm very confused when people say, oh, I'm good in Europe. And I think there's a lot of the placebo effect too.
Yeah. I suspect it's probably the stress. When Americans go and we're on vacation in Paris, we feel a whole lot different than when we are grinding it out 14 hours a day.
100%. Yeah.
I often wonder if that's it or...
No, I mean, it's for sure. There can be that. Glyphosate also is a huge thing. It's a pesticide that is illegal in Europe. And that is, very well linked to a lot of different health issues, including inducing leaky gut, including affecting the microbiome. And our microbiome is what's going to help keep us healthy. So the fact that there's no glyphosate in grains, and grains concentrate glyphosate. Glyphosate will stick and stay in the grains.
Okay.
So there's high levels of glyphosate in grains more than any foods. That's probably why. It's not just the gluten. It's the wheat. It's the GMO wheat. It's the glyphosate in there. It's like a cocktail, you know.
Okay. So last question. We're gonna land the plane. Two-parter. What advice would you give to someone newly diagnosed who is curious about natural or integrative approaches but doesn't know where to start?
Mm-hmm.
And anything specific that you love that you would recommend we check out, including your, where we can find you.
Sure. So if you're a French speaker, I would go to bien-être-auto-immune.com, where I try to have as many resources, free resources, videos and articles about autoimmunity, just understanding. I think, again, knowledge is power. So start by learning. Go to, and I'm going to tie those two questions in together. Go to the Autoimmune Wellness blog. There's tons of recovery stories, tons of recipes, tons of articles that explain what the autoimmune protocol is, that explain what autoimmunity is and talking about the root causes. And read as much as you can. Anything that is from a functional standpoint, functional medicine standpoint, or more holistic. Thepaleomom.com has a lot of great resources too. She has a good book. I would say the book is a little overwhelming if you're not in this space. It's a little much. So, I mean, it's called The Paleo Approach by Dr. Sarah Ballantyne. You can look it up. But an easier book to read is The Autoimmune Wellness Handbook that is written by Mickey Trescott and Angie Alt. That is a lot easier to read, and it's a great handbook. Kind of there's a little bit of journaling to do in there, writing, noting. It's really well done. So I would start there.
Amazing. I love it. Thank you so much. This has been so fun.
Yeah, thank you. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people will get a lot of value from this. And I
amazing.
Hope that we can check you out. Did I miss anything before we call it a day?
Maybe people can find me on Instagram, Loran.nutrition. That's my English version of Instagram. I try to be active. I'm not super active. And if not, they can go on my website. There's a few resources and there's my story on there. If people want to know more about me, LoranNutrition.com. And yeah, feel free to reach out.
Awesome. And you do patients and services in the US also.
Yes. Correct? Yeah.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we hope to do this again soon.
Yeah, I would love that.
Yeah. Thank you for coming and sharing all your knowledge. It's been wonderful.
Thank you.
SpondyCast was made possible by donations from the Spondylitis Association of America's individual members and our show's corporate sponsor, AbbVie.
Since our founding in 1983, the Spondylitis Association of America has been the face, voice, and leading nationwide nonprofit, educating, empowering, and advocating for people living with spondyloarthritis. Through our extensive work with patients, the medical community, and partners, we provide information and resources to help people impacted by the disease live better lives and champion research to find a cure.